Today, I interviewed Lucy Libido all about our main stress hormone, cortisol, and how it impacts key hormones for fertility and our sexuality, such as progesterone, DHEA, estrogen, and testosterone. She breaks down how chronic stress can steal away resources from these essential hormones and what we can do about it naturally. Whether you are struggling with hormonal imbalances, low libido, or you want to optimize your fertility, this is a must listen. Let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Having adequate levels of minerals and proper hydration are essential when balancing your hormones, optimizing your fertility, trying to conceive, or preparing for pregnancy. For Dr. Morgan and I, ingredient quality is of top concern, and that's why we love Relight Electrolyte Powders by Redmond's Real Salt. Relight contains Redmond's ancient, unrefined sea salt, which contains 60-plus trace minerals in and of itself. Relight powders conveniently contain the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and even two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These are essential for hormone balance, energy production, and overall wellness. The best part is they taste delicious and they have so many fun flavors. My personal favorite is lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan loves their strawberry lemonade. Visit redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off any of Redmond's products, from their electrolytes to their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, and bentonite clays. Again, visit redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Here's to happy hydrating along your womanhood and fertility journey. Lucy Libido is a hormone nutritionist and functional practitioner that helps women to understand the root cause of their specific hormonal imbalance. She is the best-selling author of Lucy Libido Says, There's an Oil for That, written for women who want natural libido solutions for themselves and their partners. Her community experienced a baby boom after her courses and book went viral, and then went on to write a sequel for expecting mothers, Betsy Bosom's Baby Book. Okay, so I am so excited for you to be joining me today, Lucy Libido. This is such a pleasure of mine. I love connecting with other like-minded women in this womanhood wellness space, and libido especially. I think I first found you. Obviously, your name is great. I think I found you when I was trying to find other practitioners who were doing stuff with libido, because it's a huge passion of mine. But you also do a lot with hormones and fertility. But for those who don't know you, can you give us a little bit of background on you and your story and how you got to where you're at and your name and all the things that you do?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm super excited to be here and I'm a big fan of you. And I love what you do for the woman community with fertility and with hormones. And so I feel like we're soul sisters. So this is super fun for me. I love, love, love everything that you teach. But so I go by Lucy Libido, and I always say, yes, that's my real name. When your name is Lucy and you marry a man with a very common last name, Libido, then that's your name, right? It's almost as common as Smith. So my name is Lucy Libido. Well, a little bit of my backstory is I've always taught in the health and wellness space. And I was teaching a lot of different classes on health and wellness in general. And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be fun to teach like a Valentine's Day class for couples on using natural oils and herbs for libido in the bedroom? Because, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do that are prescriptive. But, you know, I'm like, let's do a class that's focused on natural solutions. And so I kind of was like looking for the script, looking for the book, looking for the information. And this was 2016, and it wasn't there. It didn't exist. Nobody was talking about libido, or definitely not like oils or herbs or adaptogens for libido specifically. And I thought, well, I really want to teach this class. So, you know, whenever you come to a roadblock, you've got two choices. You stop and say, oh, this is too hard. Or you're like, well, I'm going to figure it out. So I said, I'm going to figure it out and I will do the research myself. So I pulled together a large group of women. And I said, hey, I want to do research on libido and oils and herbs, adaptogens for the bedroom to help us Will you participate? Will your spouse participate? We're going to do this for, you know, a period of time. I'm going to give you specific things to do, homework, and then I want you to report back so that we can get kind of a some data as to like what works. And people were thrilled. They're like, oh my gosh, yes, I need this so much. And we're so excited. We start doing this class. So the people that were most thrilled, think of like most of them at the time were married, but we had some that were single, some that were like menopause, some that were divorced. Like we had lots of different statuses, but they all had, most of them had a relationship of some sort. And the women were so excited because they're like, oh my gosh, this is going to help me. This is going to help my partner. And then after we got started, the men were like, wait, hold on. So you're giving us assignments. I was down for that because, oh, we got a new assignment every other night.
Yeah.
Wait. I missed the part where we're going to be talking about this on the internet next week. Kind of not as excited about that part. You know, they just heard the first part, all the homework.
Yeah.
And so there was a little bit concern about privacy. So I said, well, you know what I'm going to do? I will open up this class under an avatar name, Lucy Libido, and it will guarantee your privacy in all of the feedback that you're giving me. But really, all the feedback you're giving me, it's like everyone's issues.
Yeah.
But that way, it will, no one will know who I am. So no one will know who you are. Therefore, it will be completely private and safe. And everyone was down with that. So we finished the research group, got all of this great data, put it out into a class. I just thought I was teaching for a small group, and it blew up. It went viral. We had like 10,000 ads in a week. We were like having to take them in so much at a time so that Facebook didn't think they were all bots. And it turned out thing. And it was so fun, but so much work because I wasn't anticipating this. I was thinking, oh, a few hundred people. And it got so big so quick that I suddenly like had to learn how to moderate, and I had to get a team, and I had to do all these things that I wasn't anticipating. And it took a lot of my time and a lot of my effort, more than I was anticipating. And I finished up that class, and my husband was just like, you have been night and day, every moment, either teaching or writing or creating graphics. I didn't have a team, you know, preparing posts, moderating, answering questions, keeping crazies out of the group. That was a part of it. We opened up a group called Lucy Libido. You had to figure out how to moderate that bad boy.
Yep.
So much work, but so fun and so fulfilling. And I closed it. I was like, oh my gosh, I am so that was so much work. I'm so happy. I'm never going to have to teach this class ever again. Like jokes on me, because the next year everyone's like, how do I get in the class? How do I get in the class? I'm like, what? Everyone I saw all over the internet. How do I get in the class? And I realized this is not just like a 1 year thing. Like this is something people need and want all the time.
Yeah.
And I thought, if not me, who's going to teach it? Because they want the Lucy Libido class.
Yeah.
So what I did was I reopened the class, and at the same time, I was like, I need to have this like more permanent, because it was a Facebook group. Stuff was bumped around. People were like, I want to find this. And I'm like, I need it like in one place. So I turned the class into a book. And that's what
awesome.
It was. Lucy Libido said, there's an oil for that. I taught the class again. I was like, now guess what, guys? You can just keep the book and you can have the class, and it's all in book form. And I thought that, you know, a couple hundred people would buy it. And I was really hoping, because, you know, I put a lot of time and effort into all the publishing. I didn't have a website. I didn't have a publisher.
Wow.
I didn't have a marketer. I did all my own graphic design. I had a typesetter freelance. That was it. And I was like, to this group of 10,000 people, hey, so I put the class in a book. If you want it, comment below your PayPal address and PayPal me this amount and put your address in the comments.
Yeah.
This is hilarious. Okay. This is just how like little I was. Like, just send me PayPal.
And, just send me a text. It's like, oh gosh.
So I, you know, some orders started rolling in. I was like, oh, that's so nice. I'm not like in the red, like, oh, I'm going to pay my publishing costs.
Yeah.
And then a few more hours later, I'm like, oh my gosh, like the months and months of time I'm put in this, I'm actually being paid for my time now. This is amazing.
That's awesome.
Went to dinner, came home, went to bed, woke up in the morning, opened up our computer, and my jaw hit the floor. I was like, ugh, we need a shipping company. We need a shipping company. 1,000 orders. And I was shipping them by hand from my kitchen table.
Oh my gosh.
And I realized that this wasn't just a little thing. This was not a one-time class. This was not a few friends wanted it in a book. This was something that women needed. Mm-hmm. And I realized that because they were asking for me to teach it, that became my calling. And then that is why it just turned into what I do. I teach hormones. I teach libido. I do courses. And that is what I do full time now, because it's something I love. And it's something that I think that because it was fun and it was funny and it was a safe place in that group, and that book was really fun and lighthearted, but it answered all the questions and it gave people the help they needed. They felt coming to me and asking me those questions. And so my whole entire brand has turned into Lucy Libido. I run a happy hormone lab, and that's why I teach under that name, because that is how everything blew up. But it's been a fun journey for sure.
Oh my God. I love that story. That's so great. It is such a great name. And I think that there's so little information and support around that. I know that along my libido journey, I have found very little support. So when someone has looked into it, especially when you understand and know things, it's so helpful. One day I am going to write a book as well, because I have so much to share on this topic. It's so exciting, but I'm so stoked that you did that and that you just like kept moving forward and that it all worked out. That's awesome. So with that and what you've learned, you do a lot with hormones, so more than just libido. And did you write a second book on fertility? Is that what
Oh my goodness. Well, what's hilarious was everyone got pregnant. So after the Lucy Libido book came out, we had this mass like baby boom.
Yes.
Including one of my besties, and her name was Betsy Bosom. She was my helper. That was her name. And she was also a doula. And so we wrote through her pregnancy, the sequel follow-up, utilizing oils and herbs safely through pregnancy. And we call that Betsy Bosom's baby book. And it's using oils from bellies to babies and beyond, because there are baby books out there using natural things, but some of them were a little older and outdated. And you know how things are always changing in the baby world, probably even from your last baby to this baby. Even my friend, Betsy, she was like, oh my gosh, everything has changed. All the guidelines have changed, you know, from folic acid to folate. And I was like, we needed an updated curriculum. So we ended up writing that sequel for the big baby boom. And so it was kind of perfect, because we had the libido book and then we had the pregnancy book.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Yes, they definitely go together. I've had patients who are struggling with fertility, and I'm like, okay, how often are you guys having sex? And they're like, well, like, we don't really. And I'm like, okay. Well, you're not going to make a baby if you're not doing that. Like, we need to address that part too. So libido affects, you know, women in all the different seasons, but it affects, you know, along the fertility journey and even in the infertility journey. You know, I speak about that a lot, of how it can be a complicated situation with couples, not only hormonally, but also, you know, situationally and all sorts of stuff. So I love that you're doing that. I love that you wrote those books. And today we want to talk a lot about a couple hormones, cortisol in particular and progesterone. So can you kind of break down cortisol, which is one of our stress hormones, and kind of the role that it plays in general in our life, not only in our hormones in general, but also in libido and in pregnancy?
Yeah, absolutely.
So or fertility.
Fertility. Well, it impacts everything, essentially. Yep. As a holistic practitioner, everything is connected. So we'll speak to it through the lens of, you know, how that impacts progesterone and fertility and libido, because it really does. It impacts everything. Mm-hmm. So in my hormone lab, we talk about hormones as being happy hormones, or the antithesis. We don't really say angry hormones. Cortisol is really the death hormone. Now, there's a time and a place for it, just like everything in life. In our bodies, you know, we were built smart, and we were built with hormones like adrenaline to keep us safe, and like cortisol, because that's going to help to regulate blood sugar. That helps us to wake up in the mornings. However, we live in a state where we tend to just have chronically high cortisol levels because they're related to our stress. Mm-hmm. And I call cortisol the thief. The master thief, because it steals from all of our happy hormones in so many different ways, in the way our hormones metabolize, and the way that we have left over, and just even our capacity to have happy hormones. So I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with the hormone precursors, but I'll give you a little tiny lesson. But, you know, our hormones are going to come from our pituitary. They're going to come from our adrenals. They do come from our gonads, aka ovaries, testes. We do get some from our thyroid, and some hormones are made in our gut. So hormones are coming from all over. So when any of those systems aren't working well, first of all, we won't have enough. But second of all, hormones cascade down. I like to think of it like a waterfall, but it's also somewhat circular. So we have these precursors that our brain will make. These are DHEA and pregnenolone. And these are kind of like the ingredients to any kind of a thing you want to bake. It's your flour, it's your sugar, it's your eggs. And your body can take all those ingredients and it can make a muffin, or it can make a pancake, or it can make a cupcake. It can make anything out of that depending on what your body needs. And when we're in a healthy state, as those hormones cascade down, it'll say, oh, you know, you need some progesterone. We need to now convert that, metabolize that. And now we've got a little bit of testosterone if you're a woman, you know, your estrogen over here. When we are under a state of stress with adrenaline or fight or flight, and a lot of times that is, in our day and age, mental stress. Like, we're running to and fro, we're running late, we have these issues, we have to be in two places at once, we're, you know, worried about school or grades or extracurriculars. If you know your mom, you're trying to balance home and school, and oh, we don't have any clean underwear because I didn't do the laundry, and just all this stuff that's like on our brain, that adds this mental load and this mental stress, which changes the way we metabolize our hormones. So that DHEA that's coming down, that would break down into estrogen, and that pregnenolone that should break down and turn into progesterone, it takes a detour. So essentially these hormones come down and they can metabolize there. But if we're in an emergency and we need some adrenaline, your body is going to shift. It's going to detour. It's going to go down a different pathway, and it's going to turn into adrenaline or cortisol. And what's happening is we're not going down this road that we're supposed to go, because we keep getting off on this detour, and these precursors are going over, they're going down the detour, and they're going down the cortisol lane, which means we now have no ingredients left or less available to make, say, that cupcake, you know, that hormones, just like our progesterone and our libido. So first of all, we have less because the cortisol is stealing it, is going down this different pathway. And then second of all, you know, all of the chemicals and toxins and the issues that we deal with on a daily basis, and you talk about this a lot, they, you know, we've got all these xenoestrogens, our liver is backed up, our gut is dealing with these overburdened pathogens. Then our gut and our ovaries, they can't produce as much because we're, our body is focusing on what it has to do primarily first, which is I have to make sure that I'm getting these toxins out. I got to get these xenotoxins out. I've got all this inflammation. I've got all this cortisol, and it's focusing there because it's, that's like more important for life. And our reproductive system is a little bit bottom of the, like, think of it like triage. Your liver's going to triage, your gut's going to triage. Okay. So you're not going to die if you don't get pregnant.
Okay. Right.
You don't have libido. Okay.
Yep.
But if your liver and gut are so congested that you're going to overgrowth, and your body's like, I got to get all this inflammation out, or if you're in a level of stress where your body's like pushing down all this cortisol, there's not going to be anything left for those happy hormones. And then we're in this constant state of depletion where we can't get pregnant because we don't have enough progesterone, where our menstrual cycles are wacky because we have a relative estrogen to progesterone dominance. And then that's going to be heavy bleeds, cysts, fibroids, tender breasts, painful periods. We're going to have issues of high cortisol. We're going to have low progesterone. It goes hand in hand. And that means we're not going to sleep well. We're going to be irritable. We're going to have more PMS. We're going to have more mood swings. And low progesterone is very, very highly correlated with aggravating mental health conditions because we have no capacity to handle. That is the hormone that helps us mentally calm, mentally handle, to sleep well. Then we're completely devoid of that. So we're in this miserable state where our cortisol is so high. We have no libido. We're grumpy. We're angry. We're irritable, not sleeping well, having bad periods. And that is not fun. That is not a place we want to be. And so, you know, I teach about getting that cortisol down through, you know, understanding how much yes we should say, using oils, herbs, and adaptogens that bring cortisol down, making sure that our lifestyle, that our, what we say yes to actually works with our lifestyle rather than pushing everything into our lifestyle. Or pushing our lifestyle into, like, saying yes to the things that really work for us rather than trying to force everything in. and managing that better. And that helps with those pathways. And then we have more progesterone. And then there's, of course, other ways that we can supplement progesterone. There's ways that we can, oils and herbs we can use that help the estrogen pathways. So when we get that cortisol down to a relative level and we've got those ingredients to that cake, and then we still need a little bit more, then we can start supplementing. But if our cortisol is high, we're never going to have enough. And then we're just putting a Band-Aid on. We got to get that cortisol down.
Oh, I love that. That was such an eloquent explanation. And I know for me, like, I know the hormone pathways. So as you're talking, I'm like seeing them. And for hopefully someone listening, that all made sense of how you were sharing how they do to go down different pathways. We sometimes call it the pregnenolone steal. And when cortisol pulls things away from progesterone. But for anyone listening, like she said, progesterone not only is a fertility hormone, it's very important for fertility. Low progesterone can also lead to losses, miscarriages, but it also helps us feel good, right? It's the chill hormone. And a lot of women who have PMS and issues before their period have a progesterone issue. So if you're like, well, I don't know if I have an issue with progesterone, those are some clues, you know, that you might. Can you speak specifically, so when you talk about cortisol affecting progesterone, we talked about that. It kind of steals the resources away from progesterone. What about libido? Is there a different pathway other than cortisol pulling things away from progesterone that affects libido from a hormonal perspective? Like, does it pull away testosterone or estrogen, or how does that whole thing work as far as libido goes?
Yeah, that's a good question. So yes, the cortisol can pull from all of the pathways. Usually the progesterone is one that we see and we feel the most. And so that's usually where I'll start my focus on. But yes, so the DHA will go down a pathway usually to estrogen and testosterone, and the pregnenolone usually goes down the pathway to progesterone. Now there are certain enzymes they can cross, they can move, but for, you know, simplicity's sake, usually those are the pathways that they're going to go down. And usually that's where they're going to end up. And cortisol can pull and detour from any of those pathways. And so, yes, when we're talking about things like estrogen, you know, our estrogen level in a perfect world is low, you know, in the beginning of our period, those first 3 days. And, you know, it goes up in, you know, mid-cycle, you know, day 13, 14, 15, you know, we should be ovulating. And then it should come down and our body should be metabolizing and pulling out any excess estrogen that we don't use. And this is something that isn't always understood, is that our body uses what it needs and it's supposed to pass out what we don't. And I think we understand this with things like vitamin C. You know that if you just take way more vitamin C than you need and you can absorb it one time, most people kind of understand, I'm just going to like pee that out. Mm-hmm. Well, estrogen, we're supposed to use what we need and it's supposed to come down. And we're supposed to take a little break from that before it rises. But sometimes that gets stuck. And then when this relative dominance where we're not metabolizing, and this is usually due to gut health issues and liver health issues, and that stays high, our progesterone naturally lowers too. Mm-hmm. Our progesterone doesn't get stuck high, but our estrogen gets stuck high, and then we get this big gap. And then that is really, really hard with like our you know, irritability and that PMS. But to speak to, you know, the cortisol stealing from the estrogen, yes, it's going to put a burden on all of those hormones where we're not going to be ovulating as well and as consistently, because we just don't have the resources.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, because I know with libido, for me specifically, I mean, there's a lot of factors around libido that I teach about that I've struggled with, not only hormonally, but, you know, trauma-related, mental, emotional, dynamic stuff with my partner, all sorts of stuff. But one thing we do see a lot, and I'm sure you can speak to this too, is when someone's been chronically stressed, so they mm-hmm. have a lot of cortisol that they're making, that DHEA goes down. So mm-hmm. for me, when I'm running labs on somebody, if I see a low DHEA, I'm automatically thinking this person has probably been in a state of chronic stress for a while. And then that can affect libido, not only because it can reduce estrogen, but also testosterone. And I've seen women with libido issues not only have low estrogen, I think that's the one that gets blamed a lot, especially, you know, in the perimenopausal season. But I've worked with a lot of younger women who also have low libido. And they don't necessarily have low estrogen, but there's a low DHEA or low testosterone. Can you kind of speak to that, of like what you've seen or what you understand about that hormonal picture with libido?
Yeah. So it's really interesting because when you pull up, like you said, we have this ratio that we look at sometimes, and it's called the DHEA to cortisol ratio. And that's telling us, okay, how much hormone is available for those happy hormones like the estrogen and the testosterone and the progesterone, and how much of it is just going to cortisol. And so again, we only have so much, and we have less DHEA because our cortisol is chronically high. And so that tells us, okay, we need less cortisol, we need more DHEA. Now, you can supplement with DHEA. However, if your cortisol is high, you're still not looking at the root problem with that cortisol needing to come down, because the more DHEA we have available, then the more we have available for all of those pathways, the progesterone, the estrogen, the testosterone. So when I see someone who's in that state, I don't just automatically say, oh, you just need a bunch of DHEA cream because your DHEA is low. It's low because your cortisol is high. And so we have to look at lifestyle as well. And sometimes that is like, have you dealt with the shadows in your closet? Do you have some therapy? Do you need to release some old emotions? Do you, need to have some hard conversations with your partner? Do you need to have more quiet time to yourself? Are you depleted because you're giving everything to everyone else? And why do you feel that that's an expectation? There's a lot of these like mental things that go into play with that. But as far as like the libido, you said, you know, you mentioned sometimes people will have low DHEA and they'll have a low estrogen, or they'll have a low DHEA and they'll have a high estrogen. And it's, and you're like, okay, so estrogen's not necessarily why their libido is low. Well, estrogen can get stuck high. And this happens a lot in perimenopause. And so this is what's so tricky about perimenopause, is that as we're getting kind of to our later years, like in our mid 40s, and it's a little different for everyone, but we'll just kind of go with the middle of the road there. Like mid 40s, we have less eggs and we have less quality in our eggs. And so it's actually harder for our body to ovulate than it was for us to ovulate in our teens, our 20s, and our 30s. And so sometimes the body has to push a little bit harder to get that ovulation. So if you kind of think of like you're pushing something heavy and then you like let it go, you're like, whoa. So our body can push our estrogen almost too high. And then our gut also changes in perimenopause. We have a whole entire microbiome in our gut. It's called estrobilome. And that relies on estrogen. And as our estrogen goes down in general, but then we're pushing really high to ovulate, it just gets really wonky. And then we can't metabolize. And then our estrogen gets stuck at the liver because our liver is like, oh, I'm trying to get rid of this histamine. I'm trying to get rid of this pesticide. I obviously need to focus on these nutrients because I got to make sure that the nutrients are going where they need to go. And then it gets to the estrogen and it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to die. So I'm going to stick you back into the bloodstream. We have a vein in our liver. It's called the portal vein. And that's where it puts the nutrients. But sometimes it's like, oh, I'm backed up. I can't deal with you. So you just get back in line. It's like a bad line at the DMV. You've been to the, you know, and there's one person processing every fucking thing. And you're like, I have 10 windows. The liver's like the one bad person at the DMV. And it's like, you go here, you go here, you go here, you go here. And because our gut is a little bit more compromised, our liver's probably backed up because you might not have been doing liver flushes every year. And you're learning about that new. Your body is just, it's going to recirculate that estrogen because it's not going to kill you to go back into the bloodstream. It's like, just, it's saying, get back in line, come back to me later. And in that way, those estrogen levels raise and raise and raise. Yeah. But that doesn't help our libido. So when we have these high estrogen levels that are just high in our serum and they're chronically high, that's not helping our libido because we're having heavy bleeds, cysts, migraines, all of these problems. Now, if we have a good cycle where it goes up and we peak, we do have libido at the peak of our cycle. We do have peak libido when we ovulate. That's how our bodies are designed, because we're designed to have desire when we're fertile. So when we're talking about bad estrogen, the new estrogen, the one that just peaked as we popped up, that is where we have libido. And so if we don't have enough estrogen to hit that peak, then we're not going to have libido. But if it's recirculating estrogen that's high because it's backed up at the liver and then it's popping back into the bloodstream, that estrogen, that's not helping your libido. That's just making you feel crummy.
Yep. And there's also a little peak in testosterone around ovulation too, which can help, you know, with some women's libido and stuff as well. I love that. And I think you said something earlier about how it's like a triage, you know, your body triages. And I always say fertility is a side effect of optimal health. Libido is also a side effect of optimal health. And they are the two things that go the first, you know, they go out the window when health is being compromised because they are not essential. They are absolutely not essential things that the body is like, yes, we must keep these things on board. And so if you're struggling with libido or you're struggling with fertility, both are signs that there's something that needs to be investigated in a root cause format. Because we can survive for a long time, you know, just barely sleeping, drinking coffee, eating crappy. I mean, it's actually amazing how long the body can survive in unfortunate situations. Yeah, but it doesn't thrive. And these things like reproducing and having, you know, a thriving, healthy sex life are the things that are definitely going to suffer in women and men, which I think is an important thing to note, that it's not only women who have libido issues, it's men too. Uh-huh. And another.
We don't talk about it as much.
Yeah, it's not talked about. And, you know, I've even had patients who are struggling to conceive, again, who are barely having sex because their husband doesn't want to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first thing, like if someone comes to me new and I hear that, I'm like, ooh, first of all, we probably need to look at his sperm because if he's not wanting to have sex, that's a very clear sign to me that there's some health issue going on that's probably affecting his testosterone that's then going to be affecting his sperm. And he might be part of the puzzle of why, you know, you're struggling to conceive. But for both partners, you know, if there's a libido issue, I just want to bring that up, that it's not always a female issue.
How we always immediately blame ourselves and start trying to fix ourselves before we even look at him. Like how many women will try and figure it out for a year before they even look at him? I'm like, it takes two,
but I do see it's so common. So I have a question on my intake form and I've seen hundreds of patients, and this is so sad to me and why it's like something I'm super passionate about, that I ask every single person who would come into my practice, are you satisfied with your sex life? And I'm not even kidding. Probably 95% say no.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're depleted.
Yeah. It's like, it's such an epidemic that no one talks about because it's so taboo and all this stuff. So I'm so glad that you bring such like a good, fun energy to it.
You talk about it all the time in my life.
Yay. I love it. Okay. So you've talked about cortisol and progesterone, the progesterone steel. Is there anything else that you want to talk about in the fertility space? Because then I'd love to talk about libido in pregnancy and postpartum, because that's a question I get a lot from women. I actually had a question just recently on my Facebook group. A woman, she's 24 weeks pregnant, and she's like, I just do not want to have sex. I don't understand what's going on. And she's feeling super bad about it. And you know, I had to basically explain to her that the hormones shift and they're changing and they're different. But can you kind of speak to that a little bit, unless you have something else you want to follow up with around fertility?
Yeah, speak to low libido what phase?
Pregnancy.
Oh, okay. So, well, what's interesting with pregnancy is our progesterone levels skyrocket. They just shoot up so, so high when we're pregnant, which is why I always say, like, you cannot over supplement progesterone, because it's the hormone that is so high when we're in the most vulnerable state of our lives, which is pregnancy. So it can go a couple of different ways. Usually what we see, and again, that like if you don't fall into usual, there's no such thing as normal, it's how your body responds. But oftentimes we'll see that like, oh, I do not want to have sex. Usually this is in the first trimester. Mm-hmm. And because we've got so much like going on with, we're so depleted and tired, and because it takes so much energy, and then we're also usually more nauseous. Nobody wants to have sex when they're tired and they're nauseous. And that is just normal. So if you're in a phase where you're just tired and nauseous, like don't try and put that on your to-do list, because you know, you need to focus on you and you need to focus on your rest, because you're building literally another human being.
Yeah.
That second trimester, when that tends to subside and the progesterone levels are really high, a lot of women will find that they have this big libido boost. And this is like the pregnancy libido that people talk about. It's never in the first trimester. It's the second trimester, where then you've got these really high surges of progesterone, because that is the protective hormone that keeps your uterus there and it keeps growing that baby. But it also supports mental wellness. And this is why some women feel like, oh, I feel so happy and glowy. Now, if you're the woman that never felt happy and glowy, first of all, there's nothing wrong with you. You could be the woman that carries that first trimester through your whole pregnancy and you're nauseous and you're never going to want to have sex once. So first of all, nothing wrong with you. But if you're that woman that hits their second trimester, and like that's worn off and you feel really glowy and happy and you suddenly have this libido, it's probably because of all that progesterone. And so if you're in that phase, I just say run with it. Have so much freaking fun, because it's a short window of life. enjoy it. But again, yeah, there's no right or wrong. And then that tends to subside a little bit in the third trimester, mostly just because we're dealing with more of the weight and the back stuff. And we're bigger and we're more tired and it's a little harder. So that tends to like pop down a little bit. And then postpartum, a lot of women have very little libido postpartum. And for my listeners who are out there, like, I've had a baby and I have zero interest. First of all, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, that again is your hormones. We go from this crazy high level of progesterone to like, it's like just falling off a cliff, like nearly zero. And you don't have that hormone for desire. And if you're breastfeeding, some people that can even make it even less so. You know, everyone's a little bit different. So that, I call it the fourth trimester. I'm like, you really have to understand that this period of time is a period of recovery. Housing and birthing a baby is harder than any other surgery. Like, a man goes in for an ACL tear and he's like, oh, I got to be out for 2 weeks. It's like, you have to wake up every 2 hours, feed someone, we're bleeding, losing iron, we may have stitched clothes, and we're still like doing full-time mom work, you know?
I know.
Of course, you're not going to have libido. So postpartum, know that, you know, if you have no libido, that's okay. It will come back. And if you feel like it's not coming back, then we can supplement your progesterone. We can help that. But that fourth trimester, this is just about recovery. So just focus on it.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's good to normalize it, because I think especially too, we've had conversations like this on the podcast about having conversations with your partner, whether you are trying to conceive or you're pregnant or postpartum, about how things will shift and change because there's so many differences in your hormones. And whether you had a thriving libido before or you didn't, but just setting up expectations for these seasons that are maybe going to be a little different between you intimacy wise when you're going through all of these changes, I think is good, so that they're not, you know, blindsided by the fact that you don't want to have sex with them all the time. Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Stress management can come from multiple different angles, including exercise, proper diet, and restful sleep. But did you know you can also support your stress response using herbs like ashwagandha, shatavari, rhodiola, milky oats, and holy basil? These adaptogenic herbs are the ones found in Needed's stress support product, which has become one of my absolute favorite supplements I take. It's safe to take while trying to conceive and while nursing, and at any point in your motherhood besides during your pregnancy. These herbs are commonly used in traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine to support cortisol's response to daily life and to promote restful sleep. Go to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 20% off. Again, go to thisisneeded.com and save 20% with the code HEALTHYMOTHER.
Okay, back to the show. Okay, so let's pivot back to cortisol and the stress and how that can impact our hormones. And what are some of the top things that you recommend? So I know you had mentioned some lifestyle stuff, looking at it from a mental emotional perspective, but what are kind of the top tips that you tell people to do lifestyle wise? And then what about some of the herbs and the oils and that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So with cortisol, like anything, it's going to be a holistic package. You know, you can't just only throw one supplement on top of, you know, a high cortisol person and expect it to fix it. However, it's going to really help when you've got like a lot of those things, like base layer strategies in place. So first of all, making sure that we're not overscheduling ourselves. And I say this because this is my number one, because I live a busy life. I've got kids that have busy lives. We live a way more busy lifestyle than we used to. So we just need to take a look and say, hey, am I overscheduling myself? Am I saying yes to too much? And, you know, I don't know if you've heard the term, but people will say, if it's not a hell yes, then it's a hell no. Because we get to a point where we say yes to all these little things and we think, oh, it's just this little thing and it's just this little thing and it's just this little thing. And, oh, I'll just go pick that up and I'll just go grab that and I'll just fit that in. And all of that stuff adds up and then we're stressed. And then we don't have time to decompress because it's still 9-10 o'clock at night and you're trying to catch up. This is me. Catch up on everything I didn't get finished in the morning because I was like, oh, I'll just take the dog to the groomer. I'll pick up those groceries. It's like, it's all the little I just, but it takes up our time. So let's make sure we're not overscheduling ourselves. Let's make sure that we have a little bit of decompression time in our day. Let's make sure that we have time to ourselves that's quiet at night so that we can sleep well. So our cortisol isn't high going into the night, because then if it's high into the night, we'll have night waking. We won't sleep well. And then that, you know, impacts everything. So not overscheduling. Another one is have some type of a decompression ritual in your life, whether that's a meditation, whether that's time of prayer, whether that's, I love aromatherapy because I come from an oils background, taking, you know, a moment to put some aromatherapy in the diffuser and to bring that in, turning on a Himalayan salt lamp. I love that. And grounding, just going outside, walking, so that we have some time that we're not on a screen and we're not doing mm-hmm. anything for anyone else, just ourselves. That's really good. I always encourage walking morning and evening, not for weight loss, but because it brings our cortisol down. When we walk for just 10 minutes and we get sunlight, we get that vitamin D, it helps to bring that cortisol levels down. So I try and go on a walk. In the mornings, I always try and do, I heard this from another doctor and I think it's so smart, sky before screens. So before I get on my phone and I'm looking at my email because you're like, oh, I got this, and your cortisol's just going up. I go out and I take a walk and I get some sunshine and I get some view of nature and I am able to just kind of breathe and be like so grateful for myself in this present moment, even for 10 minutes. And that does not put me behind in my day. And then in the evening after dinner, I try and go on another little 10-minute walk just to kind of decompress so that mm-hmm. my body can come down for bedtime. That is a really good solution I use. And then for oils and herbs, I have a whole slew. I actually have a guide and I would love to give it to your listeners. It's a cortisol guide, foods, oils, herbs, and adaptogens that all bring cortisol down. So I've got that freebie for you, but I'll highlight a few. Lion's mane is one that a lot of people use for focus and it helps with mental stress so that we're not feeling like that mental chatter in our head as much. That helps with that. Maca root is another one that I love. And that one helps to bring down like a lot of stress. I use red clover in a lot of my people. It's an adaptogenic herb for hormone balance. It just helps us to, it doesn't push our pathways too hard, but it helps, it adapts and it kind of helps to support the progesterone and estrogen pathways. And a lot of people really do well on that. I'm a huge fan of adaptogens. Oh, a lot of people have heard of ashwagandha. I do love ashwagandha. There's another one that's lesser known, but I think is actually really good for women, and it's called shatavari. And that one is like the female version of ashwagandha, but that is an adaptogen that helps our body to, it helps us to manage stress. It gives us more vibrancy and resilience against it. So when we're combining all of these strategies where we're having some mindfulness, some decompression, some walks, not putting ourselves in situations that we're constantly stressed as much as we can, then when we're using these adaptogens, it's really going to help to counterbalance all the stuff that we can't control, which we all know we get hit with like every single day. So a combination of all those things has helped me so much with a progesterone deficiency. And then I will supplement a little bit with like wild yam. That is helpful too. And then for women, if they're postmenopause and they really need a lot more support, I'm not against a hormone therapy at all. I actually think it's beautiful and it's replacing what your body has lost. But in these years where we're fertile and we're cycling and we're looking to have babies and we're in perimenopause, all of these supports can go a long, long way.
Yeah, I love that. And for anyone listening who doesn't know what an adaptogen is, just it's an herb basically that can adapt to your body. So it can bring something up that's low or bring something down that's high. And there are specific herbs that are better for if someone has like really high cortisol and they're kind of wired and tired in that whole picture versus someone who's really depleted. Maybe they've been chronically stressed for a very long time and they're now having a hard time even making enough cortisol. And so certain herbs are better for different things, but adaptogens in general are so amazing because plant medicine's so intelligent and it just helps us so much. And I love shatavari. It's actually, I help design Needed's stress support supplement. I know I talk about Needed a lot on this podcast, but we have shatavari, ashwagandha, rhodiola, holy basil, like all of these really beautiful herbs in there. So that's amazing. And in your experience with supporting cortisol and then supporting progesterone, do you find that the majority of people who are struggling with libido in particular is a cortisol issue? And if you can get the cortisol figured out, that it kind of solves the rest of it? Or do you find that that's a big part of the picture, but there's these other pieces that need to be addressed? Or what would you say in your experience with the groups that you've led and the stuff that you've done?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think of it again as like a circular thing. This will impact this, which will impact this, which will impact this. And so if you start with one thing, even cortisol, is going to help that whole circle. So like cortisol is a big piece of it. You know, when we're looking to raise progesterone, almost always high cortisol and low progesterone, they just go hand in hand. And so yes, by addressing the cortisol, that's going to help that progesterone. And when I say by helping cortisol, it's looking at, you know, lifestyle, looking at making sure we're not being overwhelmed, all those things. So a lot of it is that lifestyle component to cortisol. Mm-hmm. And that I don't want to say alone because it's actually several different things that you're doing. But yes, right. All of those things that you're doing to keep that cortisol down almost always will result in having better progesterone levels. And then if you need more and you're supplementing with like a progesterone supplement, like a wild yam, or if you need more estrogen and you're supplementing with something like black cohosh, then those herbs are going to be able to do their job because you're filling in a gap. You're not trying to fill up a chasm. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I always say, like you were saying, like fertility is a side effect of good health. One of my phrases that I say all the time is that your libido is a report card for your hormones. Don't worry, you're not failing.
It's cute.
Because it's a sign of something else is going on. Because if everything is good and we understand everything and everything's working well, then that libido, you know, aside from being in a bad or toxic or bad relationship, you know, as long as you're in a healthy relationship, if your hormones are well, then your libido is usually well. And mm-hmm. So yes, by helping that cortisol to come down, then that will help that progesterone come up, and it will help the supplements and the adaptogens to work. Like I said, the chasm. That's another thing I say. I say that, you know, like when I'm trying to get someone from here to here, I'm like, this is like going across a chasm and you're on a bridge and you've got some of the planks already there, but there are a lot of planks missing and we can't supplement every plank. That's like one plank in the bridge. Yeah. But when we do all the other things that, you know, like the keeping the cortisol down, the lifestyle stuff, then adding that supplement, it's going to fill in that last little step. It's going to, and then everything can work together, but supplementing comes, it supplements that gap. It doesn't fill the hole.
Right. Yeah. I love that. I feel like the lifestyle piece is so huge. So what other tips or insights do you feel like if someone said, you know, tell me your most impactful things that you've learned along your journey or with the people that you've worked with or in your community, like what, if you were to tell someone, if you could like know nothing else, if you leave this podcast, I want you to know this. Is there anything else that you haven't mentioned that you would love for people to know about?
Yeah. The one thing I want people to know is that you're not broken. Mm-hmm. Because we put so much emphasis on ourselves and our sex and our sexuality, our beauty. In my group where we were giving them all this homework, like try this, report back, try that, report back. Okay. You know, we had almost assignment every day, every other day we were hopping. There was one assignment that nobody did. It didn't come back. And I was like, oh, that one must be like way out there. And it didn't come back. And I sent a reminder, hey, no one did this assignment. Please turn it in. No one did the assignment. A week later, still no one had done it. Okay. Do you want to know what that assignment was? Write down 10 things about yourself that are beautiful and that your partner values in you.
Aww.
That was the assignment. People were just like, I got to think about that for a while. Wow. All the other stuff, the physical stuff they could do. And I realized that there's a huge emotional component under our libido where we don't feel worthy enough or beautiful enough or like, oh, I don't have libido. And so we stress about that. And then it brings up our cortisol more. You're not broken. We're going to go through life phases. We're going to change, you know, as we're trying to get pregnant. We're going to change after pregnancy. We're going to change and shift as we go through perimenopause. And none of those are wrong or bad. They're just shifts. And you're not broken. And there are so many people out there like you and me that are here for you to help you in that transition if you need a guiding hand. But mm-hmm. You're not broken. It's just different. And anytime something is different, you just need a different skill set. But mm-hmm. There's so many people out there. We're here for you.
I love that. I love that whole idea that you're not broken. And for me, it's always like you're a mystery and how do we solve this mystery, right? Because your body, I think it's something for me having dealt with painful intercourse and low libido since I was 18, basically, and my husband dealing with male factor infertility, we've both had seasons where we've been like, what is wrong with us? Like, uh-huh. You know, we have felt broken in those capacities. And
I think a big paradigm shift that we both had was our bodies are doing the very best they can with what they've been given, you know, whether that's mental, emotional trauma, physical trauma, genetic issues, like whatever it is. And it's, you're sort of a mystery to unpack and unsolve, and that you're working together with your body in this, you know, relationship where to not be mad or angry at your body, whether it's that you don't have libido in pregnancy or that you can't get pregnant or whatever. It's more asking the question, what do you need? You know, so I love to teach that to my clients and patients, like asking your body, how can I support you? Just like a child, you know, you wouldn't be mad at your child if something's going on. You'd say, what do you need from me? Like, what am I not giving you? Do you need to be fed more? Do you need more sleep? Like, what do you need for me to help you? Because I know that you're always doing the best you can, and that these symptoms that we don't want, like libido issues or hormone problems or PMS or fertility struggles, these are intelligent ways that our body is talking to us to say, hey, I'm trying to get your attention that something's not right and I need support and help. Yes. And then it's learning how to interpret those messages and then getting the body or the mind what it needs. And so, you know, if you don't know how to do that, looking to people, you know, like Lucy Libido or like myself to be like, okay, well, what do I need? Right. But instead of having that mentality of, oh, I'm broken, something's wrong with me. That's such a beautiful message. I'm so glad you brought that up because it's a huge part of my journey and my husband's journey too. And that's the one message that he always shares when I ask him for people struggling with fertility, especially men, is that, yeah, you're not broken. There's nothing wrong with you that, you know, it's not a reflection of any of that. It's more, how do I help my body? And I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah. And I love that. What do you need? And that's when it's so beautiful to see a client who realizes, oh, when I feel this way, my body is telling me, you can put those things together. Like, oh, when I feel this way, I need this. And then they can start to learn how to give themselves what they need in a greater capacity. And it's so calming and nourishing to the body, whether it's mentally or physically, emotionally, serving our bodies with what they need, filling in those gaps so that we can feel more whole and complete and be the absolute most vibrant cells we can be. And when the libido comes along for the ride, it's super fun. It's super exciting. That's what my whole book was about. And I think that's why it went so viral. It was just supporting libido with oils, progesterone and estrogen. And it's like, it's been so fun, but it's also been so rewarding to see people to better connect with their partners and to, even if they don't have a partner, just have really, really good hormone health.
I love that. Okay. I have one last question that, and then I'm going to wrap up. I'm sure you know the answer to this. If you don't, it's okay. But what is your favorite lube that you recommend for people? Because I get this question a lot. And I feel like if you were in the section,
True. Okay, so it's in my book because most lubes, if they're silicone-based, that is like really toxic. And I always say you don't want to put that down on your hoo-ha, but you always want a good slippery slide. I always say, you know, who would want to go down a dry water slide? Like, that's not fun.
No.
So the lube that I use and I recommend is from my book because it utilizes clary sage oil, which is a phytoestrogen. And so it gives a natural vaginal estrogen. And so it supports natural lubrication in the body. And I use a little bit of cypress essential oil in it because that's a vasodilator. And we all know that, you know, dilating vessels is important to the fireworks at the end of our electric parade. So my lube is actually just a base of coconut oil or aloe vera. And then it has a little bit of essential oils in it and it's baller.
Awesome. Cool. Oh my God. I'll definitely try that, except I'm pregnant, so I won't use clary sage yet because it will probably make me want to go into labor. I remember the clary sage from labor back in the day. I'm prepping my clary sage for my labor, but that's really good to know. Thank you so much. And how can people connect with you? How can they find you? Where can they get all of your resources? And tell us all the things.
Come on over. So my website is a little bit under construction. It's going to be changing by the beginning of next year, but right now it's up. It's lucylibido.com. But you'll find me mostly on social media, Instagram and Facebook. Both of them are Lucy Libido, and I talk in there a lot about my hormone lab. So I have a Happy Hormone Lab. I run that twice a year, and it's a step-by-step program to go through every system in the body to get your hormones balanced, regardless of what your issue is. We put you into cohorts based on your hormone type, and then we give you all of the lifestyle, food, supplement, exercise tips specific to that hormone type. So we get people like, I'm struggling with my thyroid, I'm struggling with my progesterone, I'm in menopause. And we work with all of that. And it's really fun because it's cohorts, and we have weekly assignments. So we really keep you accountable. And I think it works well because you are accountable when you come to the Happy Hormone Lab, and it's fun. And then I have a free Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/LucyLibidoSays. And that is my big group where we talk about oils and libido. And that's just free and fun. And then I have a free cortisol guide that I'll give to you to give to your listeners. That awesome. Oils, herbs, and adaptogens to help with your cortisol. And I have a giveaway for your people. I have the Betsy Bubba awesome. Baby book, because I know you talk a lot about fertility.
Yep, so sure do. I
have a bunch of these. I don't know if this is on video or not. Okay, so we have a bunch of Betsy Bubba baby books that I'm going to you to give to your people. So you can choose how you want to do some kind of like a giveaway or a raffle, or maybe we can do like a post or something. We'll figure that out. But I've got like 10 of these to give away to your people because it's really fun about, you know, pregnancy. And we can give away some Lucy Libido books too. So cool. We've got lots of books to give away.
Fun. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. That sounds like so great. Thank you for doing that. I'm sure everyone will be so excited and we'll plan something awesome. And gosh, I have a frog too. But thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and your wisdom. I love everything that you're doing. I think it's amazing. I think we need more of this in the world. And I just really appreciate you.
Well, I'm so thankful that you had me. This has been such a fun conversation. I can't wait. We can share this with all of my following.
Yay. Awesome. Okay.
All right.
Bye. Thanks. Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Do you have your heart set on starting a family and are eagerly preparing to begin trying within the year? Have you been actively trying to conceive for several months? Do you have a burning desire to optimize your chances of conception and avoid the distressing path of infertility? Or have you been navigating infertility for a while, yet you yearn for new solutions, a supportive environment, and an approach that addresses the root causes of infertility? Our current fertility system is broken. Many couples receive almost zero support on optimizing their health and improving their chances of conceiving before or while trying to have a baby. 1 in 7 couples end up trying for over a year and then are often shuttled into the medication or reproductive technologies route like IVF. Although there is a time and a place for these tools, so many couples would have different outcomes if they had the education, resources, and support I provide in my fertility formula program. This program is a step-by-step, doctor-designed, holistic fertility solution for the couple who wants to conceive optimally. It includes everything a couple needs to know with all of the resources I've created over many years seeing patients in practice. From mastering the cycle to boosting egg and sperm quality, balancing hormones, investigating female and male fertility, having access to order your own labs, both hormones and functional medicine labs, nourishing the body with eating and managing that whole aspect, fostering fertility energy, ditching toxins, reducing stress, rebalancing the gut and vaginal microbiomes, and detoxing prior to pregnancy, this program has it all. On top of that, it includes the bonus modules of breaking up with birth control, optimizing IVF if that ever becomes needed, and my pregnancy loss guide. This is the holistic information and step-by-step guidance you aren't getting from your regular doctor that will only improve your chances of conception and the health of your future baby, no matter where you are along your fertility journey, or no matter what support you might need, whether that's getting pregnant naturally or going through IUI or IVF. Visit www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off the entire program. Again, that's www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan.
And remember, a healthier future starts now and it starts with you.